translation. O King, I shall in due course explain the measurement of time in its gross and subtle features with the specific symptoms of each. But for the present, let me explain unto you the Padma Kalpa. Purport. The present duration of a Kalpa of Brahma is called the Varaha Kalpa or Sveta Varaha Kalpa, because the incarnation of the Lord as Varaha took place during the creation of Brahma, who was born on the lotus coming out of the abdomen of Vishnu. Therefore, this Varaha Kalpa is also called Padma Kalpa, and this is testified by acharyas like Jiva Goswami as well as Bishwanath Chakravarti Thakur in pursuance of the first commentator Swami Sridhar. So there is no contradiction between the Varaha and the Padma Kalpa. So the verse again. O King, I shall in due course explain the measurement of time in its gross and subtle features with the specific symptoms of each. But for the present, let me explain unto you the Padma Kalpa. Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prestaya Bhutale Shrimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Iti Namine Namaste Sarasvate Deve Gauravani Prachanine Nirvisesa Sunyavadi Pashkatya Deshatarine Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sati Gauravakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So here in this verse Shukadev Goswami is speaking to the king, and he's telling him that later on I will explain you about all those different features of time and all their specific symptoms, but for now I keep on with the Padma Kalpa. And in the purport, Srila Prabhupada explained that according to our acharyas Jiva Goswami, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur and Sridhar Swami, actually, which is the main inspiration, they all agree that this Varaha Kalpa is also called Padma Kalpa. So Varaha Kalpa because Varahadev came into that Kalpa, and also it's called Padma Kalpa because Lord Brahma took birth on the lotus of the navel, the lotus that was coming out of the navel. So therefore it's also authorized to call that the Padma Kalpa. So that's more or less what we learned today from Srimad Bhagavatam. I was thinking yesterday when I prepared this lecture to make a little a little review of all we have heard during this weekend. I could get a lot of links. That's interesting. When we prepare a lecture, we can see what are actually our inspiration, what is in our heart, and what is actually moving and coming. And because Mataji so mercifully gave us so much inspiration during this weekend, I thought it's nice to go through, to underline them, and to keep them actually connected also with the topic and the verse of today. When Mataji was giving, I hope you don't mind that. Okay. When Mataji was giving the first lecture here, the Srimad Bhagavatam verse was also very technical, and she was explaining. She was giving a very nice viewpoint of how do we deal with those verses from Srimad Bhagavatam, who are actually a little difficult to relay in our practical application of Krishna consciousness. And like Mataji was also doing, she will also ask the audience to participate. So I would like to know who of you remember what were, how do we cope with those type of verses, or how, why are they there, or how we can utilize that. Anyone remember anything? Okay.
Quite a few men up there.
Okay.
Kuala Shaya. Well, it gives sort of the magnitude of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, though perhaps not the feature that we want to cultivate our consciousness, but we'll never be able to fully appreciate his lila and pastimes if we don't also first understand this is the Supreme Personality of God.
Yeah, thank you. Good point. Yeah, there was also this point that it makes us humble. It makes us understand that we are actually very teeny in comparison to the Supreme Lord, and keeps us or establish the ground in which actually our position is. And few verse later, actually Srila Prabhupada will mention in the purport that also Srimad Bhagavatam is speaking for every type of people, and for materialists as well as for spiritualists. And a little later, I think Shonaka Rishi is speaking. Yeah, Shonaka Rishi is speaking just a few verses later, and he said, now please let us know about the transcendental topics. Like we are here a spiritual audience. We are here. Many sages are there. Now let's please start to speak about Vidura and Maitreya and go more into spiritual topics. But the point I would like to take it from this point of understanding our position toward Krishna, of understanding our position of a servant toward Krishna, when we understand how big and how great he is. And Mataji was giving this beautiful analogy: when you see the art, you want to see the artist. So in the same way, when we become aware of all this creation, we feel more enthused to become in touch with Krishna. So this position of us who is so often trying to be in the center, trying to be the enjoyer of material nature, this is actually what needs to be crushed to dust, crushed to powder, so that we can actually come into our real position of a servant. Now this false ego is interesting to see how it manifests. Very often is connected to I and mine, to the identification of ourself to be the material body. But very often it's also manifesting into I know better. And this is very interesting, how we very often get caught into this perspective of us knowing better, or us knowing everything. I was speaking with one Mataji some days ago, and she was telling me, no need to come to the temple, I know all those things. and very very often when we speak with devotee, sometimes we see, oh yeah, this I know, this I already know. And my Guru Maharaj will explain that as soon as we think we know, we are actually stuck. We actually cannot progress anymore. We cannot go further. Once this ego is really to very very much connected of following directly, of being totally into the direction, into the guidance of Krishna, and giving up I want to control, I know, and all of that. And there is a very nice story of a king who needed to have one servant just engaged to praise him. That will be the only duty of that servant, just to praise the king. So he made an announcement so that candidates will come for this job, for this service. So one man came and the king said, "Okay, so are you qualified for this service?" And the man said, yeah, I'm very qualified. And then the king said, I'm not sure you are qualified. The man said, yeah, I'm very qualified. The king said, away, go, you are not qualified. And few were like this. And then after some time, another came and the king said, are you qualified for this service? And the man said, yeah, I'm very qualified. And then the king said, I don't think you are qualified. And then the man said, oh yeah, king, you are right. I also don't think I'm qualified. But maybe you will fit into it. Oh yeah, dear king, I can fit. I'm not sure. Oh yeah, dear king, yeah, I'm not sure too. So he said, this one, he will be able to praise me. He will be able to follow exactly what I want him to do. And this is basically how we should come into the spiritual realm, in the spiritual dimension of totally giving ourselves into the hands of Guru, into the hands of Krishna, into the hands of Vaishnava, and just somehow let this ego be dissolved of our tendency so strong to control and to be in the center. And Mataji was very nicely connected. Oh, actually, before that, I would like to read you just a quote from my Guru Maharaj on connected to false ego. Don't be in illusion and twist that false ego that makes you think that you are a great Rasika Bhakta. We have to diligently bring our false ego down the throne of our heart and replace it by service attitude. This is very nice, this analogy of the ego which is sitting on the throne of our heart and who wants to be in the center, and to twist his arm in the back to bring him down the throne, and to actually allow Krishna to sit on that throne and to become the real master. That this fake illusion of us being the master is twisted and taken away from us. Mataji was also underlying this point of the different rasas that are waiting for us to be revealed, of what is our own relationship with Krishna in the spiritual world. But all those relationships, they are going through the gate of dasya, through the gate of service. And as long as one is not totally absorbed in that identity of being a servant, there is almost no chance for this real identity to be revealed to us. That means what we can do on our stage is really deeply try to work on this identity of becoming a real servant, a real servant of Krishna, and even closer, even easier, and even more pleasing to Krishna is that we become humble servant of his servants, of the servant, of the servants, of the servants. Mataji was making such a good point in one of her seminars. It was based on care, giving shelter and taking shelter between devotee association. And she was saying it's actually not so easy to develop this bhakti feeling and to serve Krishna with real loving, with real love. Very often our service is bound in duty way. I have to chant my rounds, I have to do like this. And then when we perform our devotional service in duty way, we just don't get revelation. And because we don't get revelation, we are continuing to serve like this. So it's like a vicious cycle of no revelation and duty-bound service. And Mataji was explaining that when we are actually learning to give shelter to other devotees and take shelter from more advanced devotees, then this love, these loving exchanges will enter our heart, and then we can engage this, the heart becomes softened, and then we can engage that in the direct service of Krishna. And I was just remembering actually a very nice verse that come in connection of that, and that's spoken, I quoted already many times here, but it's never enough. That's a verse spoken by Vritasura. Vritasura was in the battlefield and in deep struggle with Indra, and suddenly he started to pray in the middle of the battlefield. And his prayer is, when, my Lord, will I again be in that position of being a servant of the servant of the servant of the servant? Because then all my words will be able to glorify you. All my thoughts will be able to remember you. All my activities will be engaged for you. And that means by this entering gate of serving the servant of the servant of the Vaishnavas, Vritasura is saying, then I will get the access to this pure, loving, devotional service. Put all my thoughts on you, all my words, all my activities. And I was very enlivened and very happy to hear this point. I thought it was so good, I want to repeat that point today and stress a little bit on this importance of us coming deeper and deeper and deeper into that position of servant. We have heard it so many times, but until it becomes really inside of our heart, it becomes part of us, then we really need to hear it again and again and try to see how to apply it and how to see to make it that part of us. So in another big point that was coming in relationship with those dealings between Vaishnavas, between senior Vaishnavas, junior Vaishnavas, equal Vaishnavas, was very much connected to envy. Envy, which is actually the strongest, one of the strongest impediments in our relationship between the Vaishnavas. And envy is directly connected to false ego. Why are we envious? Because we cannot be in the center and someone else is in the center. Mataji was giving such good explanation that especially on equal to equal, it's very, very difficult to deal, because we are all equal, but we all try to show I'm actually a little superior than you. And that's actually very, very tricky, and that's very, very much connected with this envy feeling. We can see also very often this envy when toward younger toward junior, who are so much enthusiastic in their devotional life, and they seem to make a lot of progress and very fast. And the older devotees, sometimes they feel irritated. Devamrita Maharaj was mentioning in a lecture, in a joking way, you know, the older devotees speaking to the junior devotee and say, don't worry, you will see in 1 year, you will see in 5 years, you will not be so much enthusiastic anymore, don't worry, cool down. And that's I remember sometimes Maharaj is preaching to the Pandavasena, young teenager from England, and when we are in contact with those young teenagers, you just get so much enthusiasm, just get so enlivened because they are so fired up in their devotional service. So we know, obviously, we need to associate with more advanced devotee of preference, but sometimes younger devotees are also very, very good association, especially for this big enthusiasm. When Gokovinda Swami was, when Srila Prabhupada wanted to give sannyas to Gokovinda Swami, so many of the GBC members or older devotees, they were opposed to that Prabhupada would give him sannyas. And they spoke really to Prabhupada, how can you give him sannyas? He's just a young man, just a few years he's in Krishna consciousness in our movement. And Prabhupada said, you are the young man's. He is much more advanced than you. And here we see also they were very much motivated by this envy. How can he, we are much longer following Prabhupada, how can he get a position so high, so fast? And we can see very often this envy is coming in our hearts in this type when we see others progressing faster than us, or when we see others happier than us. Some days ago, I had a cooking service and bringing the deities to bed in the evening. And one evening, everything was just going totally wrong. I was banging my head on the fridge. I was burning my fingers. There was no milk. Everything was just going wrong. And I just became a little bit like, my consciousness was shrinking. And in the evening I was tired and I was doing my service and I was hearing lecture, but I just could not hear anything anymore. I was just dull. And I was hearing in the temple room were two devotees and they were laughing. And I was just feeling in myself, I was just feeling like, why are they so happy that I have to struggle like this? And because that was the topic of the day, I couldn't understand. Yeah, this is manifestation of envy coming to my heart. And it's very interesting to analyze that actually these six enemies, this envy, greed, lust, anger, they are coming very much on the surface when we are actually becoming spiritually weak. When we are spiritually strong, it's not affecting us so much and it's actually purifying, it's actually cleaning them up. But when we are spiritually weak, then they have tendency to come up. Like sometimes we speak about fault finding. Sometimes devotees come to me and say, oh, what can I do when I'm all the time looking for faults in others? And I always tell them, when this happened to me, I see that like an alarm signal. I see that like a red light blinking, like urgency, Gora, hurry. You need to read more. You need to absorb more in your chanting. You are on the mental platform. Therefore you are seeing faults and you are having those difficulties. I think it's very, very good that we learn to observe ourselves, and that's very subtle a manifestation of this envy, and that we are able to observe them and pray for this removal and actually work on it and become more spiritually charged so that we can actually go over those symptoms.
It also means that envy is always there still, even if we feel spiritually so charged, we don't feel envy, it's still there.
Still there, but it's on the process to disappear. It's dissolving. Slowly. There's a beautiful verse in Srimad Bhagavatam. That's one who has only two lines. I think in Kapila Dev in the third canto, which say that actually practice of bhakti yoga, of devotional service, is dissolving the false ego. It's just like slowly dissolving. So not only it makes you above those lower push, but at the same time dissolve them. Gogovinda Swami also was mentioning that Prabhupada wanted ISKCON to be a society without envy. That where all the different devotees, and especially the equal level devotees, will be actually able to collaborate in such beautiful way, because there will be no envy. And also this point, often when we hear about community of care, about caring for the devotees, there is always this very important point of encouraging. Mataji was saying, fanning the spark, fanning whatever good is there in the hearts of the devotee. And this envy has really the opposite effect. When we have this envy, we would like to extinguish the spark that is there in the heart of the others and show how good we are. And this is also very detrimental, and we need to be very, very careful to not not extinguish anyone's spark. Some weeks ago we had a lecture here, and I was asking, the devotee was giving the lecture, but why is it that some devotees, they don't follow so good some points or something like this? And the speaker said, yeah, look what they are doing to good. Look what they are doing and fan that. Even if they don't do what you would like them to be at, but just see whatever they are able to do and just help them that to be fan. When I was a young Bhakta, they asked me to paint the temple room in Zurich Temple. And that was quite a big job. And there was a fence, a big fence, a little bit like this, the metallic one, with very many ornaments, and I had to polish all of that, and it was just such a tremendous work. And the temple president told me, I will send you devotees to help you. But nobody will come. And I will ask, and nobody will come. And one day, I just became so angry that I went up to the ashram to see what was happening. And I just saw most of them were resting or speaking, joking, and I just felt so envious of them because they are having good time and I have to work. There was anger and there was enviousness. So I went to speak to my Bhakta leader. Oh, it's not good. And he said, look, you are envious for those who are on the material platform. You are envying others who are not in the spiritual level. Like, I don't know who was saying, someone was saying, when we go on Harinam, we should feel compassion toward people. We should not feel envious. Oh, they can enjoy life. And so the devotee told me, look, you have the mercy. You can just totally be absorbed in service to Krishna. Don't be envious of those who are not able to do so much service. Devamrita Maharaj was giving a very nice comment on envy. He was saying, very often when we feel envy toward others, that means we see they have a quality and we are not happy about it because we don't have it. That means it's indirectly an appreciation of the quality of the other. So he was saying, instead of taking it in the indirect way with the ego and feel disturbed, better to just glorify and just go in the direct way. It's anyway a type of appreciation. So just glorify the devotee and do it in a direct way, which is actually positive and not non-detrimental. What animal represents envy?
Snake.
When we see snakes, usually we feel a little afraid. It's the symbol of death. Some days ago, I went just there in walking, and I saw two snakes. That was the first time I saw a snake. One was like the length of the arm, gray like my, and something like red, yellow on the head. He was just passing by and did not mind, so it was not so frightening because it was some distance. But then a little further, there was a smaller like this on the road, but he was taking his nap. He was resting on the road, so I thought I don't take the risk to wake him up with my legs. I will wake him up with some stones. So I started to throw stone, and then he went away, and then I could.
Huh?
Yeah, that was a black one. Okay. Okay. Anyway, that I also remember last year during Kartik, I was chanting very close to Giriraj in the wild area. And there was a tree maybe 5 meters to me. And as I was chanting, I saw one snake coming down the tree. And I immediately felt, okay, let me go away from here. Because they are cobras, they are poisonous snakes. So Radhanath Swami is saying that actually the snake is less dangerous than an envious person. Because the snake can just attack the body only. But an envious person can destroy your bhakti, can bite your devotional heart. So Haranath Maharaj is warning us, with those who are overly envious, we should actually try to help them with a little distance, little. Yeah. Definitely. Yeah. Definitely. But the bad is also there. When the bad is obvious or very strong, then we should be careful. But we should not look for it. But when it's really like it is said, when devotees make mistakes or things like this, when it's minor mistake or like this, it's not necessary to all the time go and correct them. But when it's something really big, then that it needs to be addressed. So in that sense, Haranath Maharaj mentioned, when a person is really into that, then it's important to be a little careful to not be beaten by it. Yeah, any other? We have an interactive lecture today. Kumaresani, you wanted to add something?
Recommend in terms of dealing with different types of people to make friendships with the people, to give shelter to the those who are junior to you, and take shelter of those who are senior, and to avoid the envious.
Oh yeah.
Nectar of instruction.
Okay. Oh yeah. Thank you. Everyone could hear what Kuvaleshaya said. Please repeat loudly, because I was doing some other. I just heard the end.
It's in description of the characteristics of a Madhyamadhikari and the nectar of instruction in the purport. Srila Prabhupada described that the Madhyamadhikari knows how to deal with four different types of people.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, my brain function isn't really here, but the be kind and give shelter to the innocent, to be equal with those who are equal, to take shelter of those who are senior, and to avoid the envious.
Mm.
The mighty, mighty
car. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
I have found myself a few times in situations when I meet the most senior devotee, and this devotee, he kind of gossips or tell me things about another devotee. I don't want to hear about it, but I'm afraid to offend them, correct them, because they'll love me. In this situation, I can manage to go away.
Mm.
So but then I find myself hearing this thing, which is also an offense. So what should we do in these situations? Because they can say something, and the person can be offended.
If they are on the equal level, it's very good to tell Prabhuji, we are going into a difficult, in the dangerous area, let's go out of it. But if they are senior, you just say, oh Prabhu, oh my God, I forgot, I have some milk on the fire, someone is waiting for me, Prabhu, I need to go to the bathroom so much, please forgive me. just get yourself out of it.
If it's in a situation, you just meet the person, you haven't seen for some time, it also happened to me. I haven't seen someone in 6 months, and then we met and suddenly speak, and then things come.
Otherwise, you could also, if it comes again and again, you could tell it in a very humble way.
Mm-hmm.
Like there is one sadhu in Braj that's actually an ISKCON devotee that I meet every year at Govardhan. And he has this tendency to always criticize Babaji. Always. And one day I met him on the Parikram, and we were walking and speaking about Krishna consciousness, and suddenly he started again, and he is much more advanced than me and much more, and then I just said, Prabhuji, I'm sorry, I need to continue the Parikram alone, it's too dangerous for me to hear what you are saying, and he look at me and just walk alone. And it happened. It's interesting because he has an ashram. And last year I wanted to go to his ashram. So I called him and asked, and I met him again. And again, it started again in the wrong way. And again, I told him, "Oh, Prabhuji, I'm sorry. I cannot hear anymore." And then I thought, "Okay, I forget going in his ashram. It's too dangerous." Someone
didn't understood point, because when one is coming on the level of spiritual level, one not see what other make different than I.
Mm-hmm.
They will see the goal which they are all going in direction. So it doesn't matter how tilak, how one is dressed. And the other thing I wanted to say, I was just inspired about this point, and I thought actually this emptiness is coming in time, at least I remember for myself, when I'm not satisfied from inside with myself. Then it's the point when anger and everything is coming.
Thank you. Yeah, I touched already on this point. Thank you for mentioning. So I wanted to end the lecture with a little beautiful touch by speaking about another snake, a snake that was called Agasura. One very poisonous snake that had been sent by Kamsa. One morning Krishna woke up with a funny idea. And the idea is, today I want to go on picnic with my friends. So he went to Mother Yasoda and he said, "Oh, auspicious one, today I want to take my meal in the forest with my friends. So please do not turn down my request." Yasoda moved her head and said, "No, no, 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 no." Krishna said, "Mother, if you don't allow me to go, then in the name of God, I will go anyway." Krishna was so sweet, and Yasoda could not refute his desire. What she did, she went to the kitchen and she started to cook and cook and cook and cook so many items. If you look in Kavikanapu, Ananda Vrindavan Shampu, there are two or three pages of preparation she prepared for the boys. And then Krishna blew on his horn and called all his friends. There were thousands of friends. They all came and they all had their own lunchbox, their horns, their flutes, their covered stick, and they all went in the forest with thousands of cows. Actually, Shukadev Goswami mentioned there was Asankhyata cows. Sankhya means we categorize, we count, we number the things, and Asankhyata means unlimited, not possible to count at all. And Radhana Swami said, Krishna is unlimited energies, unlimited power. So at the same time, he has also unlimited cows and calves. And Braj is also totally unlimited. And he's making a point. He said, in one way, Krishna is covering his supremacy in Braj, he don't show so much in his Aishvarya, but at the same time we can see his opulences. Very, very beautiful. Now, when they left for the forest, they were all playing on their flute. They were, not all, but many were playing on their flute. Many were joking, some were singing. And in this wonderful noise, can you imagine thousands of boys playing their flute, chanting and laughing, entering into the forest with thousands of calves mooing and going. What a beautiful picture. The boys will dance and the flower garland will dance on their chest. And when they arrived in the forest, they just took off all the jewelry their mother had used to decorate them. They found those sapphires and rubies and gold were not good enough for themselves. So they placed everything on the ground and decorated themselves with flowers, sprouts and leaves, and that was much beautiful. The boys took some powder, color powder, and made some paste and decorated the others with that, and then they were ready for a funny day in the forest. Sometimes they will run. Sometimes Krishna will go ahead to go the beauty of the forest. And then the boys will run after Krishna, trying to touch him. And they will scream, "I will touch him first! I will touch him first!" And they will run toward Krishna. And sometimes Krishna will be out of their vision, because sometimes Krishna will go very fast. So they will smell, where is Krishna? And like bees looking for the honey flower, the boys will look for Krishna. And then when they will reach Krishna and they will touch him, they will ask Krishna to decide who was first to touch him. They will play a lot, they will steal each other's lunch bag, and they will steal it and pass to the other and pass to the other, and the Gopa will not have his lunch bag, will start crying because he could not find the bag, and then they will give him back the lunch bag. They will sometimes steal the flute of each other and throw the flute very far away. And then they will go, they will pick up the flute and come back and say, "I have a gift for you. Please accept this flute." In this way, they will enjoy a festival of stealing. Srila Prabhupada gave a very, very interesting comment in one purport. He's saying that actually, all those descriptions are there to invite us. They are open invitation for us to go back to the spiritual world. This is what the life, this is the life that is waiting for us in the spiritual world. And when we hear those descriptions, our eagerness should be fanned. We should feel, yeah, I want this fun. I want to play with Krishna. I want to be so close and run after him and touch him also. Sometimes the boy, they will see a bird flying in the sky, and they will run and put their arms like a bird, and they will follow the shadow of the birds. Some they will imitate the graceful movements of the swans. Some they will climb in the trees and sit next to the monkeys. And then they will look at the monkeys, and when the monkeys will make their face, the boys will make their face also to the monkey, and the monkey will get fearful and run down, and the boys will run after the monkey and make them fearful like anything. Some of the boys will sit down silently next to the duck and look at the duck. And some they will jump like frog into the river. Some they will make very dense step, exaggerated step of dance, and others will laugh at looking at them. Some will hide behind a tree, and when Krishna will pass, they will blow their horn to make him surprised, and Krishna will burst into a laughter. At the time, they would just run so fast, and suddenly, as they were running, they stopped sharp, and they look, what was that? A huge cave! A huge cave! They never saw before. The boys were wondering, are we in another place of Braj we did not know before? And others said, no, I recognize this place. This was not here before. So they said, wow, what is that? It looks like a deep, deep cave. And some of the boys said, no, that's a demon. That's a demon in the form of a snake. He was very huge, 12 kilometers long, very tall. And the other boy said, come on, don't be so foolish. How can a snake be so big? So the frightened boy came back, and they were all discussing, what is really that? And they all noticed it's actually a demon. They could feel the hot wind that was coming out was smelly, was not so nice. Mm-hmm. And they were pointing with their finger, look at these mountains. And that was actually the teeth of the snake. They were like the veins of the snake that were on the side of his mouth look like vines that were waving to the boys, come in, come in, come in. So the boys thought, let's go in, let's go in. They look at Krishna and they saw they were still into the glands of Krishna. So they thought, there is no problem. Because just few hours ago, no, actually, some days before, Krishna had been in the stomach of Bakasura, and there was actually no problem. So they thought, no problem to go in the belly of this demon. Krishna could kill Bakasura so easily. No problem. Let us go. They started to go in, clapping in their hands, singing very joyfully. The cows had their tail raised and followed the boys into the mouth of Agasura. Agasura was such a cruel and envious snake. When he was hearing the boys playing and joking, he was feeling so envious. And he was the brother of Bakasura and Putana. So he wanted really to make revenge to Krishna because he killed them. He was thinking, when I kill Krishna, I will offer the oblation that we do for dead people. Instead of using sesame seeds and water, I will use the cowboy and Krishna for oblation to my sister and brother who were killed. Very, very cruel. Very, very envious. So the boys entered and Krishna was looking. And Krishna fell, no, no, don't enter, don't enter. But the boys just continued and went in. Now, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur gave a very, very astonishing comment. He said, does it mean that the Satya Sankalpa Shakti of the Lord, which make all his desire become true, does it mean that the Satya Sankalpa Shakti was out of function? Was in disorder? Krishna did not want the boy to go in the mouth of the snake, but they still went. So it means his energy was not working? And then he said, no, actually the boys wanted to go. They had their desire. And the desire of the devotees were stronger than the Satya Sankalpa Shakti of the Lord. So somehow he could not stop their desire to go into the mouth of the snake. So Krishna was now thinking, how will I do that? How will I kill that demon and not harm the cowboy? How will I do that so that they are protected, that they don't die? So he thought for a little while and then entered into the mouth of the python of Agasura. Agasura kept his mouth open, looking, when is the last one Krishna coming in? When is he coming in? And when Krishna was in, the mouth was shut. Everyone, the boys and Krishna, were in the dark, in the stomach of the serpent. And then Krishna definitely thought, now I need to kill. At that moment, all the demigods in the sky and all the demons, this time not only demigods, demons were also in the sky. So all the demigods were saying, alas, alas, Krishna went in the mouth of the snake. And all the demons were saying, yeah, wonderful, wonderful. Lokanath Maharaj said they had firecrackers and they were really enjoying Krishna had entered into the belly of the snake. And when Krishna heard those sounds of the demigods and demons, he decided, let me do something to turn it around so that the demigod will be super happy and the demon will be. And then he started to expand his body, and Agasura was expanding his own body, and Krishna expanding more and more. It was like a competition of mystic power, but finally Krishna won, and the belly of Agasura burst like a ripe pumpkin. And he said that the boy, the cowboy boy in the stomach of Agasura had died, actually. Do you know why?
He couldn't see Krishna in the dark.
Yeah. There was few reasons. They did not have air to breathe. The stomach of the python was trying to digest them. But most of all, they were in separation from Krishna, and that was the most painful. So Krishna, like in the Leela of Kaliya, revived the boy with his glance, and they all came out of the belly of Agasura. And the demigods were so happy. They glorified Krishna like anything. And Prabhupada gave very, very beautiful comment. Few sentences I would like to read to you about the glories. The glory, how the demigods are glorifying Krishna, and how it is important for us to glorify the Lord. Sometimes when we read, we have the tendency to switch off the mind. Please stay with me, just a few sentences. The perfection of life is to satisfy the personality of Godhead. Therefore, everyone should engage in glorifying the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The decision of all great saintly persons is that whatever qualification one has acquired should be utilized to glorify the Supreme Lord. One should be trained how to glorify the Supreme Personality of Godhead by one's respective qualities. Education, austerity, penance, or in the modern world, business, industry, education, and so on, all should be engaged in glorifying the Lord. Then everyone in the world will be happy. Krishna comes, therefore, to exhibit his transcendental activities so that people may have the chance to glorify him in every respect. To understand how to glorify the Lord is actually research work. To understand how to glorify the Lord is actually research work. Very, very. Without Bhagavat Bhakti, without glorification of the Supreme Lord, whatever we have is simply a decoration on the dead body. Very, very beautiful, Prabhupada. The demigods were so happy. They were throwing flowers, they were playing dudumbi and offering prayers. And Lord Shiva was especially happy. And he started to dance and dance and dance in madness. And the earth started to open because of his dance. And then from the moon on his head, a drop of nectar came out and fell on the scales that were on around the neck, and they all became living beings, and they all started to dance with Lord Shiva. This is Jiva Goswami in Gopal Champu. It's just like pouring nectar. Just. So that was the pastime of, in short, I went fast through, I have many other details, but in short, I think it's very, very nice when we hear about the pastimes of the Lord. And Prabhupada also was saying in this point that Krishna is coming in this earth to exhibit his pastimes so that we can actually glorify him. How can we glorify someone without being in connection with the attributes of the person or the quality of the person? If we want to glorify someone, we have to say, you are a very good cook, or you are a very good singer, or you cannot glorify, you can say you are very nice, but it's not such a good glorification. Basically, to glorify someone, we need to be in touch with the qualities of that person. So if we want to glorify Krishna in our chanting, we should actually remember his qualities. And then it's become impetus for us to glorify him. So that was my attempt this morning to serve the Vaishnavas. It was a little spontaneous lecture. I don't know if there are still any comments or questions, or if we should end here.
Thank you very much for the nice talk. I just wanted to make a little comment about that aspect of serving. You know, you mentioned that often we are simply only doing things out of duty. So I think, just to make sure we don't misunderstand it, nevertheless, a devotee is also very dutiful. There's nothing wrong with serving out of duty, but it's kind of a duty of love. You know, the bottom line is dedication and you know, commitment to serving Guru and Prabhupada. There is a strong sense of duty there. You know, but it is the foundation of the duty is love. The burden of love with a caring, you know? So sometimes even when we feel a bit of a push there in maintaining the service and so on, you know, and there's a duty there, yes, I have to serve, cook the offering, this, that. So alright, that sometimes is there in our service, but nevertheless, the bottom line is always actually love. We do it out of love to our Guru Maharaj, to Prabhupada, to the deities, and so on. Right? So it's not that we want to throw out the whole aspect of being dutiful. Because that also has to be there in order to give up that spirit of enjoyment, you know? Because very easily we could misunderstand it and say, alright, being dutiful, this is just dry hire or whatever, let's just float around like a bumblebee and do whatever we like doing or something. Because duty is just, or it's not devotional service or something, you know?
Very nice, yeah. Thank you so much. Very, very important comment. Very, very nice. I remember Bangladesh. I was in Bangladesh at the end of last year, replacing Sachinandana Swami for her retreat, and Mataji was very, very kind and very, also very often bringing those essential points really into the light, so that we really keep a good base, a good ground in our devotional life. Very good. Thank you so much. So Shyamnam,
I wanted to ask if you could please tell a little bit about the anartha, which is, you said about envy.
Actually, I spoke all of that in before, already. But basically, we should become strong. When we feel and see envy coming to us, we should understand it's there, obviously, but we are very often, it's the sign we are on the mental platform, we are spiritually weak, and that means when it comes time to times, because it's there, it's alright, but when it has tendency to come more often or to be more around us, then it's we should read more or chant more or associate more or do something for being more on the spiritual platform. I don't want to repeat because everyone heard already.
Actually, I have one question. Since you're pretty expert on the demons and the qualities they present, I have heard there are some demons some bad qualities, some anathas, which we ourselves can uproot, and some which only Krishna can uproot. And they correspond somehow to the demons which were killed by Balaram, which were killed by Krishna, but I don't really know more about it, which one are which. Do you know this?
I know a little bit, yeah. I know a little bit on that. Pralambasura and Denukasura are actually represented on mode of passion and mode of ignorance, and are actually very, very strong anathas, very, very strong one. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur said that for those anathas, the living entity must make extra endeavor to remove it. But that's very interesting. It's very paradoxical, because he said we must do extra endeavor, but this extra endeavor is in praying for the anatta to be removed. So it's still to be removed by the spiritual master, by Balaram, and by Krishna. But we need to do really a special endeavor into our taking shelter, into our prayer, so that this anatta will be removed.
So would you say there are any demons which actually we can kill and uproot, or no?
The only things we can do is to pray. That's the only things. It's and in the demons is the same. All the time it was or Krishna or Balaram who killed them. Most of the time the Vrishpasi did not even try to fight against. They just waited for Krishna to come. Just when Nanda Maharaj was followed by a snake when they went to Ambikavan for the Shivaratri, there was this big snake that started to eat up Nanda Maharaj. So the cowboy took some piece of wood that had fire and tried to burn the snake, but there's just no way. It did not work. And then when Krishna stepped on it, then it transformed into Vidyadhar, one demigod. So most of the demons, the Vrishpasi, did not even try. They just called Krishna to come and save them. Sri Ananda Manjari? I heard this statement that Krishna, that the real Vrindavan Krishna is actually not killing the demons, but when the demons are killed, it's Vasudev Krishna. I have heard that also, but I don't want to think that's another Krishna for me. but I also heard that, but I don't know much. I remember I asked my Guru Maharaj, who also confirmed that, but I think he was saying there is actually not that doesn't make a big problem if it's Vasudev Krishna, or it's maybe to show how Vrindavan Krishna is really so much into sweetness. That I think that should bring the point in that. But as I remember, I asked my Guru Maharaj, and he was saying, "Don't worry about that. It's not a big issue." But commentators have said that. Yeah. I saw there was one or two hands more. Yeah.
Isn't it like that the demons only appear in the Brahma?
Yeah. Yeah, that's real. In Nitya Lila there is only rumors. There are only rumors that demons are there, but there are no demons. And Bhakti Chaitanya Maharaj mentioned something very far out. He said that sometimes Purnamasi asks some gopis to paint the face of a demon in a big billboard, and sometimes just behind the bush they bring up the billboards with the picture of the demon, and everyone say, "Ah, the demon," and they all run away and call for Krishna. That's quite amazing. Sometimes when you know, when we drive on the highway and you see all those billboards, they are also very often they are also face of demons on those. But we can actually remember Krishna while driving. Fine, so it's 9 o'clock, let's not stretch it too long. Thank you for your good participation, so much enthusiasm that I did not have to ask if you have question or answer. They were just coming in the flow. So, Garantara Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.